This podcast is proudly brought to you by POC Podcasts.
Hi, my name is Kgabo Legora and you're listening to Son of a Son, where I as a dad speak to other dads about how we can become better men. Today I'm joined by Mlamli Boy, the CEO of Centech, and also an amazing father to three amazing kids, one of which produced for Beyonce. You're going to enjoy this one. Hello, 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 good people. Hope you're well, hope you're good, and hope you're still safe during this time. My name is Kgabo Legora, and this is Son of a Son. Oh, guys, if I have to tell you about this recording, the man standing across from me is someone that I really, really, really admire. His name is Mlamli Boy. I hope I'm pronouncing it properly. He's one guest on this podcast that is going to be the first person that is a father of children that are over 10 years old. His kids are actually, they're old enough to be, you know, my siblings. And so he's old enough to almost be my dad. And it's honestly an honor for me to be having you on my show. I shouldn't even be saying Butimla because a lot of people call you Butimla, but I should be calling you Ubaba, Babamla. I don't know what. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Kgabo.
Thank you.
I think it's a privilege, should I say, to be here and sharing my thoughts and possibly experiences with you.
Yeah.
And as a father, as a parent, it's as you said, my kids are over 21, all of them. Firstborn is 26. Second borns are 23, the twins. So So I've had a few years of parenting so far.
And I mean, I think just also for context for those that are listening is that Ubabamla has he's mentored my wife and I as well a couple of times, and there's a lot. You know, when I was thinking about this recording, I was like, yo, I could ask you so many different things, whether it has to do with business, marriage, parenting, golfing, because that's also a big part of your world. I think if you're not in the boardroom, mind you, he's the CEO of one of the biggest telecommunication companies in South Africa as well. And if he's not in the boardroom, he's on the golf course. If he's not on the golf course, he's running. If he's not running, he's creating a farm from his house. So there's a lot. But you know, not all of us fathers can say that our son has produced for, drum roll please, Beyonce. That is, you know, you know this. That's something very special. And I think, and I don't want to say, we'll get to it naturally in the conversation, but you know, I was thinking about the fact that you are also a father of twins, fellow father of twins. I mean, I'm still, you're way ahead of the curve than me. But your two sons are, you know, they're super creative, right? I don't know a lot about them, and I was wishing that you could share a bit about that, because I think that as a creative in this industry, my background with my parents and how they brought me up as a creatively minded child was hard, to say the least. And I guess sitting across from a parent of creative children, I wonder how you did that, because you do it so well, right?
Sure.
For you with your boys, what is your philosophy? What is the holy grail of your parenting style?
Sure. Yeah. Look, there's a book written by, I can't remember now the title or rather the author. The title is Parenting is No Child's Play. That's the title of the book. So I think I do concur with that statement that parenting is no child's play. I don't have the formula. I couldn't give anybody any formula, but I can only share my experience, which really governed by what God has helped me and my wife to instill in the lives of these young people that God has entrusted into our lives, into our hands. Mm. How did we do it? I mean, you're asking about creatives. I'm an engineer, so for every engineer that you speak to, they will tell you that every good person is an engineer, or every person who's good is an engineer. Mm-hmm. It's a bias that all engineers have, and I guess in every profession, people do have those biases. Mm-hmm. But for me, starting with my eldest son, you know, when he was small, Bubele, we have a piano, an acoustic piano in the house. I played music for bands, for a band in my youth as a young Christian. I played a guitar and I taught myself keyboards and taught myself how to read music. I learned music myself. Yeah. And when my son was small, before he could even see, he was playing keys on this piano.
Yeah.
So he developed this interest and he started playing guitar. So I bought him little guitar when he was small. So as he grew, he was growing in his love for music. In fact, he loved to listen to, because we listened to gospel music. I mean, there was one artist, Ron Canoli. Mm. He loved to listen to him. And when he came to South Africa from the US to do a show here in Johannesburg, so he wanted to go and meet with him. So we tried that and, well, went to the show, but we didn't get to backstage. So how we then nurtured the interest in our kids in the areas of their talent, should I say, or their wiring, if you like, we basically just expose them to the opportunities. In music, I exposed him to music, exposed him to musical instruments. And then at school, we then decided that he can go and do music lessons at school. So he did music theory at school, piano, and did jazz, and then it was becoming very clear the direction he was taking. But there was one rule in this house for all of them, that, remember, I'm an engineer, so they must do maths and science, all of them, to matric.
And I wanted that to, as a I rule. Wanted to get to that because, you know, my father was a lecturer.
Right.
He lectured college. He lectured college. Then even went into working in the Department of Education. So that was that academia. Academia has been and always been a big part of him, right? And my mother was a teacher.
Right.
And so firstborn son is now always in class drawing. They is drawing. They is saying that as he grows up, he says he wants to be an animator. As he's growing up, he's dancing for years. And that's the thing that looks like he loves and he's good at.
Yeah.
But the academia has this conflict in their heart.
Yeah.
Of what do I do with this?
I was just coming
in there with that. Yeah.
You know, I mean, art is science, I believe, and music is mathematics. So if you can't do numbers, you're gonna struggle to do to do beats in music. So therefore, I think even in the situation where you have a child who's very artistic, they like drawing, expose them to the art that they love to do, encourage them and assist them in the numerics and the sciences, because that broadens their thinking. And it broadens their scope of what they can choose to do, because the issue is you must not confine them too early in their schooling career or schooling life, so that when they get to grade 12, they shouldn't say, sure, I thought I was going to do arts, but I think now I'm more interested in medicine, but I don't have maths and science.
Because you carved that way.
Too early. Sure. So you broaden it by saying, do the subjects, the STEM subjects, after which you can go and do politics if you like.
Sure.
It's all open. But if you close it early, then it becomes a problem. I mean, then elder son became interested in music production. When I bought my first Apple Mac in 2005, he started playing with GarageBand. And then he outgrew GarageBand too quickly. He started his band at school, and he produced his CD at high school. So we could see that this is where he is going. And now his siblings are following behind him, and the one is interested in video, taking videos and so on.
He's hectic on YouTube.
Yeah, so now he's a YouTuber. He's studying video, or rather studying film production at UCT. And that's his career. He wants to follow the route of film production. Now you can see the collaboration started to happen a while ago between him as a film producer in the making.
Yeah.
And the musician, because now you've got to write a score for the film.
Yeah.
So now there we are.
That's beautiful.
The guys are, they've started to team up already to where Wello will produce an artist, and then Abongo will then produce the video for that artist and then blend these two together. And then there is teamwork that happens, and the young girl is very much interested in health and nutrition.
Yes.
So he advises them that, no, you can't eat that and still think that you're going to develop your six-pack. So this is your journey in life. Yeah. Be healthy so that you can be a healthy musician, a healthy video and film producer, and that's so on and so forth. So that's his that's her route as a... she's finished now. She's doing her... They call it community service in the Eastern Cape. And she'll be done with that end of this year. She's on YouTube with a program called, she's calling it Health with Azzy.
Oh.
So she runs this program on YouTube, advising her peers and anyone who's caring enough to listen about health and stuff. Yeah.
You know, there's always this thing of our parents. And I mean, I guess my father's probably similar in terms of age group with you. They always say that our parents did what they could with what they had and with what they knew at the same time. And I guess I always, whenever I feel like, and I hear stories of people in my age group or colleagues say that they, you know, their parents supported and pushed them in those directions early on in their lives, I have to always acknowledge that, you know, why was my father or my parents so adamant on, man, this thing might not work. So which I'm alluding to the fact that what for you made you feel like it's okay for them to pursue the arts and that they'll make it? Because stereotypically speaking, for black people, that it was not the norm in our thinking.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess credit goes to my wife, who spent most of her life bringing up these children.
Sure.
So she's invested a lot of time, prayer and everything to our children, and supporting them, helping them with homework when they were still at school. But then coming back to your question, what is it that made us to allow our children to pursue their passion? I think like every other parent who wants their child to succeed, and we want them to do normal careers, you know, the ordinary, where you can find a job. People think so. But we took a view that if you want to be a musician, you're going to be an educated musician. That's not negotiable. You can't tell me that you're going to do beats and you don't understand how those beats are created. You've got to do music and understand the theory of music and understand the physics of music.
Sure.
Then when you're wanting to design your own studio, you'll understand the acoustics that needs to be taken into account when you're designing that, when you're arranging your musical equipment, in even in this lounge here, when he comes home, he turns it into a studio.
Yeah.
But then he knows how to arrange things because he's learned and studied that. So we said, you will follow your passion, but you will learn everything there is to know about that passion.
Mm.
Then you will have an upper hand, or you'll be miles ahead your other peers in the field, because when you are learned in your field, you have better vocabulary.
Mm.
I started learning how to play drums much earlier on, so I could play a little bit of drums, but then there was a message that I read from this video where this guy said, you need to learn how to read music so that you can increase your vocabulary of playing drums.
Oh.
So it's the same thing in each and every field. Mm. In the arts, if you are an artist, you better go and learn everything there is to learn about art. Mm. If you are a musician, you've got to go and learn everything there is to know about music. If you want to play music as a performer, be the best performer.
Yeah.
I think for us, it was, we were driven by the notion that you've got to be best in what you said you like to do, and we're not going to confine you.
Mm.
Obviously, we confine them only up to grade 12 for their advantage, of course.
Yes.
My youngest son, who's a twin boy, he started doing business science. He wanted to do film production.
Mm.
And his second option was business science. So we're inclined to push him to do business science because, you know, we think that's a safe career. You can get a job. Sure. So he did it for 1 year.
Mm.
And then he came home and he says, you know, can I please drop this? Mind you, this is 1 year now. School fees are not cheap at UCT. 1 year.
I've yet to feel this, but I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says, can I drop this? He says, ask why. I just hate accounting, he says. Okay, what do you love? And then he states the things that he likes in terms of producing. You could see the work that he was doing in video production.
Mm.
So then we said, we're not going to allow our child to be miserable for 4 years because we think that he must follow a career we think is best for him.
Yeah.
So you allowed him, but with the knowledge that the theory of accounting that he learned and business economics that he learned in first year of business science is not lost. He's going to use it in his business in film. So there was that little detour for him. And I mean, we kind of blame ourselves by convincing him to take that second choice instead of taking the first choice of the arts. But now we have no regrets. I mean, my counsel to my children is that, guys, I'm only able to support you until you finish studying.
Mm.
But once you finish studying, please make sure that you stand on your own 2 feet financially. Don't come back to me because you've chosen this career, this line. You're on your own now. I've paid for you to study and that's it.
Yeah, same thing with me. I remember my father, I was finishing, it was my final year. It was my final year of varsity. And I remember first quarter of my final year is like, let's start finding internships. And I'm like, yo, already?
Already.
So I'm like, yo, I'm still thinking like, yo, I need to just give them, you know, sometimes like with blacks, we say, just give them the paper, the qualification, then you can do what you're going to want to do.
Right.
And that was the condition that my father gave me. He's like, after you're done with your degree, you can go dance, you can go be an animator, you can do all these things that you want to do. I was like, yo, okay. But then I've spent 4 to 5 years doing something that maybe doesn't contribute to what I actually wanted to do.
Sure.
But eventually, I think in my final year, I decided that, you know what, I need to fight a little bit and fight in the right way. I think that, you know, in the circles that I know, like stereotypically, we go through some things with our parents where it's like, at some point I'm going to have to learn how to stand for what I believe in. And the cost of that might be not having their support financially, which is a hard thing now. And the new generation sometimes is willing to take that leap. In my final year, I remember telling my father in the second semester, I was like, I'm not going to find a job.
Yeah.
I'm going to start my business.
Right.
I don't know where the money is going to come from. I'm going to finish this degree. That was my promise to you.
Yes.
But I'm going to start my own business. And their thought was, we've spent 5 years, 4 or 5 years of fees, and you're not going to find a job.
Studying what?
I was studying information management, which is really just research at its core. And they were like, no, but you could do this, you could do that, you could do their jobs here. He was sending me these photos of the newspaper articles with job openings. And I was like, I had to keep saying, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
I have an idea. I have a business that I want to pursue.
Yeah.
And it might mean that I don't have an income for some time, but I'll make it work.
Yeah.
I had to back myself to do that. And I know that this is sometimes a story for a lot of people. But I think even with what you're saying, I'm like, you know what? Like, eventually, like what you're saying is like, I'm going to pay for you. I'm going to back you till a certain point. But at a certain point, you're going to have to fly.
Yeah.
I guess there's opportunities that your son had while he was studying in America that he had to latch onto. He knew that, you know what, after I get my degree, my father said that I'm going to have to spread my wings and do something here. And I guess that's that trajectory that he took. Moving on slightly, you know, I call this podcast Son of a Son, meaning that you're a product of another son. They say usually that, you know, our fathers raise us based on how they were raised. And I guess I've never asked you this, and I don't know what the answer would be, but I'm curious as to what are your fondest memories of your own upbringing with your father? Because I guess it's like, yeah, but you know, if he's raising his kids like this, how was he raised? And you always think that that's the byproduct, but sometimes it isn't.
Look, I guess the advantage our kids have now is that they don't have to, because they are children of professionals, so they don't have the burden of having to quickly go out and work so that they can support the siblings, because parents can't afford to educate the siblings. So I think the generation of our children, or my generation of my peers as parents, our children are at an advantage in that they only have to worry about themselves and their future. Whereas during our time, if you had younger siblings, you had to worry about those who come, you know,
after you.
So you have to educate those. My parents were not educated, right? I think my dad must have gone up to standard four then. And my mother as well, they were not educated. So I'm a son of a peasant. My father was he worked in Joburg, but he worked most of his time in Cape Town in the hotels as a migrant laborer. My mother was at home. So I was brought up by my father, who I saw. I was fortunate in a sense, because as the youngest at home, I saw my father more than my older siblings saw him, because he stopped working in 1968. I was, 5 years, 6 years old then. So at least I got to spend a bit more time with him, because he came back home to start. He was an entrepreneur, by the way. I think this is where the entrepreneurial spirit came on me, because he started businesses in the village. Mm. Most of them didn't work. Mm. Started a butchery, didn't work. Started a bakery. Not that it didn't work, but it did not produce enough for him to say he's going to educate his children using what came out of the. He had to stop and then go and work. And then the last business that he did when he's after stopping his working in Cape Town hotels, came home and he started continued doing his bakery business, which he stopped and decided to go into the farming, subsistence farming. So I grew up in a subsistence farming environment where we used to and farming and looking after cattle and sheep. So how we were brought up then at home was hard work, very, very rough. I'll be honest with you. The way I was brought up, I could not do that to my children because it was, I didn't like it and therefore I couldn't do that kind of parenting to my children. But it taught me a lot because he taught me that nothing comes easy. So you've got to learn to do everything yourself. As a young man, you've got to learn everything in the house, plus what is happening outside in the garden, in the fields. So by the time I got to high school, I could do everything in the home, from baking to cooking meals. And in the outside, I could do everything with cattle and plowing and everything. So we were taught everything, both boys and girls at home. So my older sisters were able to work outside and work inside.
That's special.
Because the message that my parents taught us was that there is no work that you can say this is for women only. You have to eat, you must cook. How are you going to live in an area? Because my father used to say, you're going to leave this home and go and work somewhere else. Who's going to iron your clothes? Who's going to wash your clothes? You better learn now. So we literally learned everything. My father taught us the outside work. He was good, by the way, in the kitchen, because sometimes he would come. He worked in a hotel. He would come and say, you guys, you don't know how to cook. Just step back, all of you. And then he takes over the cooking in the kitchen, you know, and so on. So that's the kind of a man that molded my life.
I love how, you know, I mean, right now we are at, I can't even say it's a peak. I don't even know, but we are at such a hectic time of this whole patriarchy stuff and inequality that I think a story like that really just strikes something warm in me, because I'm like, for a father to teach his sons and daughters that here in this home, we're all the same. What he can do, you can do. That's very special. And I, you know, now that we're talking about this, I'm remembering sometime last year when you told me about Unene. And Unene was, brutal killing, and how you said that she's not far, she's quite close in your family, friend of a friend of
my kids, she was a friend of my niece's so that's the relationship.
I could not, you know, when you hear these stories, you're always like, it always sounds like it's someone there.
Yeah.
And then you start hearing it coming closer, that it's a friend of a friend, or a cousin's friend, or your own cousin, or it was your sister, or it's your mother, or it's your sister. And I guess I got touched when you told me that, because I was like, this thing is not a, you know, brutality or inequality or abuse or whatever we want, whatever else there is to it, is not a thing that is out there. And it's not a thing to be ignored or taken lightly. But it's something to intentionally work at making sure that we work against
right.
in the right way. And so I guess I'm also getting to the question where I'm like, with your boys, with your sons, when these things are happening, I always wonder what are the conversations around the table.
Sure.
You know, with that parents have with their kids.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, just to be a fly on the wall, what do you have these conversations with your boys?
Sure. You know, interestingly, my son, my younger son, he wanted to take an elective at varsity. So he says to me, you know, there is this elective that speaks to feminism.
Mm.
So I want to take a course on feminism. And I'm asking him, but what for? Why do you want to do that kind of a course? No, I just need to learn this and that. And this. But okay, fine. What other options are there, you know, for you to learn? Way between what is going to help you in the film production and what you want to learn in terms of general knowledge about life skills and how to treat women. Then he decided that, okay, he's going to take the one in film. But the point I'm coming to then is that when we have the conversations, when you talk about brutality against women, the gender-based violence and all these things which are horrible happening in our society, these two boys have got a sister.
Mm.
So they get very upset when they read and see about what other men are doing to women because they are saying, we have a sister here.
Exactly.
And we'll protect our sister with our lives.
Mm.
But there are other sisters out there who are not our blood sister who must be protected.
Mm.
And therefore, let's call out these men on the behavior they have towards women. And it starts with utterances, you know, what people say about girls, about women, how they view them, how they treat them. And I think it's, parenting and desired behaviors, I think are a lot more caught than taught, because you can teach as much as you like. But how we work here at home and how we do things with my wife, we don't have to say a lot, but they see that it is an environment of sharing. We're sharing everything. We're sharing the work that we do. She may do a lot more of the work because I'm not around to do that. But there is nothing that I could say, no, I can't do that. This is a woman's job in the house.
Yes.
Even for them here, because we taught them everything. Just as I was taught how to cook and wash my clothes and iron, these guys were taught how to do all those things. When they are back home, they used to cook. And when they were here as high school children, obviously during holidays, because we had to allow them time to study. But when they are home now, each one take turns to cook a meal for the family. Because we're saying, this is not a hotel. I mean, this is kind of a commune. Everybody, when you come home, you're going to have your day when you pick your favorite dish to prepare for all of us.
Yeah.
And you're going to clean up in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So when we're sitting around the table then discussing all of these things about the roles of men and women, we're instilling a culture that says, there is no role that is necessarily exclusively for a certain gender.
Sure.
The only thing that you can't do is what you anatomically or biologically are not designed to do. A man cannot bear children.
Yes.
So that's the role of a woman.
Yeah.
But once a child has been delivered, then it's your role as a man to look after that child, you know, from birth to whenever.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of conversations which we have where we're trying to teach the guy. And what it does then to my daughter, it gives her a hard time, because whoever, whenever she's evaluating a man, she's, without me saying it, she's going to look at that man in the eyes of her father. If this guy is going to treat me like this, I've never seen my father treating me like this or treating my mother like this.
And
therefore... Yeah, and he's a definite no. So already there are disqualifiers which she uses to assess who she relates to. I think this is what Fiona calls mirroring. So she's using what she is seeing in me. But there could be a flip side where counter mirroring can happen, where people will think about, no, for instance, if the father was doing something bad, not so good at home, then a child would say, I would never be like my father.
Yes.
Which if it was something that's bad that I'm doing as a father, when my son or my daughter says, I will never be like that, then she's going to go the other extreme and
understand.
And hopefully be a better person.
Hopefully. You know, there's so many questions that I have, and you know this, but, you know, sometimes I'm thankful that this is just a podcast and we can even have another recording another day. I really appreciate your time and I appreciate your stories and your input. I have one last question. I ask this to all the guys that come for the recording. To the fathers, to the men that listen out there to these stories and our fathers and men in our society, what would you like to say?
Sure. You know, we have been created as men to be strong and therefore protect our women or protect women in society. Married men, protect your wives. Abuse is not only physical, it can be verbal abuse. So the power of the tongue to men and to everybody, in fact, but I'm saying to men, just say honoring words to your wife, to your children, and never label your children. You never say to your child that they are stupid, because whatever you say as a parent, that sticks. So you've got to specialize in positive affirmations to your children and be very close to your children. You'll never be their friend. Don't try to be your children's friends. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to mess it up. But be very close, to the extent that you become the first person they tell you things that bother them. Things that are very deep that young people in general don't speak to their parents about. As a parent, you've got to get to that point where your children are comfortable with you to tell them about their struggles. And then all you have to be and do as a parent is to assist them to overcome those challenges. If children are still small, you've got one window of opportunity to impact that child as a parent. From 0 to 12, that's your great window of opportunity to instill everything that you want to instill as a parent. Once they become teenagers, they begin to develop a mind of their own. You change gear in terms of how you parent those children when they are now teenagers. They get to 18, there's yet another gear that you get into. You get to 21, you change to a different gear of being a mentor now. You've parented them, you've guided them. Now you become their mentor and the sounding board. And so to all parents, to all fathers, all I'm saying is make sure you spend time with your children. Switch off that TV. In this house, in my house, we never eat around the television set as a family. Even when we had no table, in fact, we had a little glass table. In fact, the first thing that we decided to buy was a dining room table before we bought couches so that we can sit around the table and eat.
That's amazing.
So sit together, eat together, have conversations together. Time is precious. You have only 18 years with your child if they are going to stay with you until they finish matric. Post that age, they are gone to be influenced by somebody else. You better play your role whilst they are still available for you to play that role as a parent. And God will be your helper. God has been our helper. I have to emphasize that. No wisdom of our own. It is really by the grace of God that we are the parents that we are. And we're still learning even today.
Yeah. Thank you. I am Khawul Ghora, and thank you for listening to Son of a Son.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by POC Podcasts.